Welcome, everyone, to another episode of the Mana Spike Podcast. I am your host, Eric Cias. With me, as always, are my wonderful co-host, Jay Anquetel.
Hello. How's it going?
Adrian Lopez.
He sounded so seductive.
And William Hendricks.
I need a change of pants.
Yeah. You don't wear pants. All you do is wear really short shorts on campus all the time.
What is your definition of really short?
Like fingertip roll.
They're not like booty shorts.
They are.
Although, if I had a pair, I would probably wear them.
Especially in New Mexico, because we live in the desert.
Why don't they make magic booty shorts?
Like, magic booty shorts would be, like, one side, it's like
would you dab symbol, this?
And then on the right butt cheek, it's like this. I would definitely wear those shorts.
Tap this. Yes!
That is both offensive and wrong.
Oh my god.
It has to have a pretty high equip cost. Like, sacrifice your dignity to equip.
To equip that ass.
You don't have to be mean about it. Shorts now.
Oh my gosh. Alright, everyone, so how have you guys been? I saw a lot of Adrian this weekend. What about you guys, Will and Jay? What were you guys up to?
Just chilling in Alamo.
In Alamo, huh? I heard it was somebody's birthday.
Nope.
It was my birthday.
No, it wasn't your birthday, dummy. It was William's birthday. Happy birthday, Will.
Happy 3-0, bro.
Yep, the big 30.
What? He's not 30.
He's 3-0 on his last.
You don't get to tell me how old I am.
Like,
that's how old I feel.
I'm sorry.
In that XO bracket.
I'm 29 and I don't feel 29. I feel way younger, especially hanging around with you kids.
You're 55.
Stop lying.
Yeah, but it's a soft 55, not a hard 55.
You're soft to 55.
More like squishy. Squishy 55.
Soft.
God damn.
You didn't have to go quite all the way to squishy, but I mean, if you want to.
So how was Alamogordo? You guys had a GPT or what?
Yes, Grand Prix trial for Atlantic City. And it was cool because, well, not exactly cool that it was on my birthday, but I'd made cupcakes the night before. And since there were only 12 players, we had a good 3 cupcake to player ratio. So I've never actually, I think that's a probably very uncommon occurrence to have equal amounts cupcake support as prize support, but
gotcha.
It's pretty cool.
Was it 3 packs per player in the prize pool too?
Yeah, 3 packs and 3 cupcakes per player.
It should have been like 3 cupcakes per player in the prize pool. Like, you have to win to get a cupcake. No participation cupcakes.
I feel like your pastry prize support probably needs to be a little flatter. Maybe you could have it like tiered. So you get Hostess Donut if you just like X2 drop, but it works us all the way up to slices of cake or, I mean, it could be a whole system built around that. I think more tournament organizers should pay out prizes and food because then it's just immediately consumed and everyone feels like they get their value. And then you have those all kinds of like meta discussions between players about what the EV of the tournament is and like are the Portland tournaments plus EV because they're getting voodoo donuts. I think it'd be a nice direction to go.
All right. So originally I hadn't been planning on playing in this GPT because I had some family stuff that was going to happen this past weekend, and at the last second, my parents tell me that it's off. It's not happening. And this was by last second, I mean like 11 p.m. the night before. So I wasn't able to get a deck in time to play in the event, but I went down with Will and really enjoyed the shop. Like, I really like that Alamo shop, in stock games, and had a lot of fun just watching the event and being there for once, but sadly I couldn't play, even though it did look a little soft personally, but that was my weekend.
I forgot to put baking soda or enough baking soda. I'm sorry that the cupcakes were too soft.
Adrian could have hooked it up. He's got baking soda. He's got it.
I heard you made a pretty good trade over the weekend, Jay.
Oh, yeah. So over the weekend, it was Will's birthday, and I figured, hey, let's do something special. So I managed to trade up to a foil Tasiger for my buddy, and also traded some standard stuff for some dual lands. So got a Plateau, and pretty good trades in Alamo. Like, it's great finally getting, like, to a new spot, and people haven't seen your whole trade miner, and you can actually find people looking for things that you weren't able to get rid of before, people didn't have any interest in. So always good to travel a little for those trades.
I mean, that's the beauty of pre-releases also, right? Because that's when all the casuals come out and they want to trade for all the casual stuff. So you want to make sure your trade binder's like chock full of all the good casual stuff that you can't normally get rid of on your own. That's what I normally do, and I'm able to do pretty well.
Yeah, a lot of those limited events, I think, call more to the casual player than Grand Prix trials, but I was still able to find a lot of players that were looking for random stuff in my binder, so had a lot of fun getting to know people down there and met some fans of the show. That was really awesome. So just cool weekend in Alamo for me.
Nice.
Yeah, shout out to DJ. DJ, a really nice guy, fan of the podcast. He told me that I was his favorite cast member, so big shout out.
What the?
I was his favorite.
Wait, we were the favorites, and that Adrian was definitely the worst.
I feel like maybe there was a bribe of cupcakes.
I feel like you're just jealous because you didn't get to eat my sweet velvety creations.
Wow. All right, so let me tell you guys what happened to me on Friday. I go to my local shop, Sun City Games, and I stop by because I wanted to pick up some cards and just talk to the guys for a little bit. I wasn't planning on playing FNM or anything, and I didn't. I was just talking to one of the owners, and he was telling me, hey, are you coming to the GPT tomorrow? I was like, I was not aware of the GPT. Tell me more. And he said, well, it's a GPT for Vegas. And I said, I'm totally in. I was planning on playing somewhere else, but I'm totally in. I want to play in this GPT. Who's judging? And he's like, John from the store, who's the level one. And I said, okay, cool. And then I thought about it, and I was like, I think he's going to Dallas for the Star City. And sure enough, he was. So John calls me, like, literally 30 minutes later, and he's like, Eric, what are you doing tomorrow? And I said, I guess I'm judging this GPT for you because I was planning on playing in it, and no one can play in it unless there's a judge. So that's what I did on Saturday. I head judged my first GPT since getting my level one, and it was pretty cool. I had a lot of fun actually judging for once and getting to see everybody play and have a good time. We had 18 players show up. I did have to give 2 game losses for deck registration errors. Ugh, that's not fun. But it was still pretty cool, and it was awesome to watch a lot of the matches go on. There were a couple of the green-white decks that had won Miami the week before, and those matches took forever. Literally, all of my rounds went to time. Top 8 went by fairly quickly, but top 4 went for 2 hours before cutting to the finals. So I was there from 10 in the morning to about 9:30 at night. It was terrible. What did you do on Saturday, Adrian?
Well, I wanted to go to a GPT because I thought I would go and help my buddies out who were trying to get their buys for Vegas as well, because I already got mine. So I decided to play 2 decks I normally wouldn't play. So I took Blue-White Heroic, which I do play a lot on Moto, but I'm just terrible at it. I decided to play it in paper. I took it to a top 8 and then lost the first round to Florentino Barraza, who is out of, I want to say he's from Lubbock or Clovis, I'm not sure. But props to him for taking down the GPT over there in El Paso. There were actually 3 GPTs at the same time, I believe, on Saturday, correct? Will's in Alamogordo, yours at Sunrise, and the one at Sun City, correct?
Correct.
Wait, you were at Sun City.
I was at Sun City, you were at Sunrise.
I was at Sunrise. So yeah, there was 3 GPTs that day, which kind of spread the players thin.
Not good scheduling.
No, not at all.
On a TO side of things.
No.
Hopefully
but
these stores can get together and kind of schedule them.
If they'd all been at one place, you all could have had cupcakes. Like, think about, that's the importance of proper scheduling. There could have been so much cupcake consumption.
Thanks, Obama.
These things had been better.
I don't see how this is Obama's fault.
I really would just wish Barack Obama would just get his meddling hands out of our GPT scheduling.
Yeah, he's always muddling the mixture.
And our cupcakes. Alright, so
that was a pun.
So that was Saturday. Sunday, Adrian and I went to yet another GPT. This was in El Paso, and this GPT was also for Vegas. And let's discuss this real quick. We had 14 players, Will. So at 14 players, what is the round structure that you do for a GPT?
4 rounds cut to 8, normally. You could do 5 cut 4 or 6 cut 2.
Okay, you could do 5 cut 4, you could do 4 cut 8, you could do 6 cut 2.
Yes.
So,
you still do that?
At exactly 8 people, you're supposed to just play single elimination.
Right.
Which is awful. Nobody actually likes an 8-man single
elimination. Do people actually do 6 cut 2?
Well, you can add, so basically if you add the Swiss round, you can add a Swiss round to decrease the size of the cut, but the Swiss system is designed around, the implication is that X2 will put you in the cut, so by adding an extra round, you essentially try and preserve that kind of balance. But the average GPT is in the low teens, and so the average GPT tends to have that awkward sizing.
So, the DCI event reporter had suggested 4 rounds cut to 8, which is pretty normal. Like, most people are used to cut to top 8 for a GPT, and that's the way that I was expecting for it to be. Before the event started, they announced 5 rounds cut to 4, and I had made it very well known that if it was going to be 5 rounds cut to 4, I was not going to play in the event, because it was on a Sunday, and it started at 1 p.m., and I didn't want, or I think it started at noon, and I didn't want to be there for 5 hours and not make the cut to the top 4. So even though a 4-rounder cut to 8 would have been exactly the same amount of rounds, I would have at least known an hour sooner if I was in the cut or not. So if not, I could have left an hour sooner rather than playing out an hour later to just try and hope. So after I had made my intentions of not playing in a 5-round tournament known, other players started to make their intentions known, and it kind of didn't go so well with the head judge. He was okay with whatever, but the owner was really intent on keeping it at 5 rounds. And so after we said, well, if it's going to be 5 rounds, we're not going to play, and she found out that she was probably going to have less than 8 people playing in her event, she went with the majority vote of the players, which was the 4 rounds cut to 8. How do you feel about that, Will?
They're both, like, if the options were 4 rounds cut 8 or 5 rounds cut 4, then they're both things that you can do. For an anecdote, I guess, the GPT in Alamogordo had 12 players, and we did 4 rounds cut 8, so we did the same thing that I guess you guys wound up doing. But I feel like you want to be receptive to feedback, you want to be able to see what the players want to do and actually adjust to that, but it's possible that there's a situation where it makes sense. I seem to find that in a lot of these awkward sizes, you wind up with functionally a dummy round. So one of the things that happens in the 12-man, 14-man GPT is that not a lot of games are played in the last round.
Right. You're absolutely right. Especially if there's an extra round added in there. A lot of games aren't being played. I know that in round 4 I was 3-0 going into the round, so I just drew in. And I think another match had drawn in also, but had it been 4 rounds, I would have still, like, double drawn in to top 8, or top 4, I think, just because of the size and the number of match points that everyone had. So, in either case, it doesn't really matter. what it was, but I just wasn't happy that they were struggling so hard to cater to what the players actually wanted. By no means was I, like, standing on the table saying, hey, guys, don't we want four rounds? I was just saying, like...
Not what I heard. I heard you just...
Got it, yeah.
Straight ground to table.
No, and I mean...
In between. I heard you just leaped up there.
Adrian was there, and he...
Yeah, and he jumped on the table.
I believe him. I have no reason not to.
He jumped up there. He started throwing beanie babies all over the place.
Bad. You know, that just seems appropriate, given the circumstances.
All right. Well, anyway, needless to say, it was a four-rounder with a cut to top eight. In round one, I get paired up against Adrian. So, Adrian, what was going through your head when you got paired up against me? Well, okay. So, first of all, what did you play?
I played Naya aggro.
Okay, and I actually was on the green-white list for Miami because... A friend of the cast, Roberto Gonzalez, had convinced me to play that deck, so I built it literally the couple of minutes before the tournament actually started. So, you and I sit across from each other after we find out we're playing each other. What is going through your head?
This guy's free as hell. I'm gonna win. Guess I'm gonna get some more buys so I can get four buys for GP Vegas, show up, and just... You know, they give me the money immediately because... Or I just show up on Sunday for day two. Like, I was like, free, this guy's easy. No, I don't know.
Easy GG.
Yeah, I was just, I didn't...
Even in the hypothetical world where you can stack buys the way that you thought you did you think there was going to be 60 players at GP Vegas where day one was going to be four rounds?
Only four rounds. How long's day one usually? Like three rounds? That's it, right?
Yeah, just about three, eight, nine, somewhere.
Yeah.
In that ballpark.
Man, you should be able to stack buys. That would be awesome. But no, I was kind of bummed out because you don't want to, like, go to a tournament and then always be, or, like, round one get paired against your best bud, you know? Because that sucks, because you're both kind of... I mean, I was there to try to help you out to get your buys, and I have to get called on really early. You're not my best bud, Eric. Don't get excited.
Yeah, if your purpose of going to this tournament is to get him buys, then you should accept that you're able to nobly fulfill that purpose as soon as possible.
Yeah, but man, I struggled.
But he didn't. He didn't. So he went in before the tournament actually started and said that he was there to help me get my buys. And in round one, we get paired against each other. And in round one, I ask him, so are you conceding to me? And he says, no, so we have to play. And what happens? I wreck him. Not only do I wreck you, I wreck you so hard that you are crying. You're crying, Adrian. I'm sorry I made you cry. I hope we can still be best friends, Adrian, because I
is this when the
I just
table jumping
made you
occurred?
Cry. Yeah.
You, like, jumped on the table and tried to comfort him by throwing beanie babies at him?
Hey, you were digging at me last week for...
You were doing this. Okay. All right. The rivalry has begun. You did this. I want you to remember that. That today, on St. Patrick's Day, you did this.
Of all days, St. Patrick's Day.
What is the significance of St. Patrick's Day in the conversation?
It's the day of my people.
Was it?
Korea.
It was the Shamrock Bear that he threw at you.
Hey, doesn't Mickey D's have the Shamrock Shake right now? Are those good?
You know, last year I went to go and get one on St. Patrick's Day, and they're like, we're out. So depressing.
What? Really?
I got to maybe retry this year, but yeah, they're really good.
I've always wanted one. I'm going to go get one.
Okay, so anyway. So anyway,
right,
Adrian and I... play in round one, and then we continue on with our tournament. Both Adrian and I make it to top eight. I'm the number one seed. Adrian is the number eight seed.
Yup!
And we have to see each other again in top eight. This time, Adrian humbly concedes to me because he was there to give me my buys.
Aww. Well, he also remembered what happened round one.
Probably I thought it was going to be time for Adrian's again. Revenge. The revenge.
That doesn't happen.
Mob rule, man. I almost beat Eric with mob rule.
It's true. Mob rule's pretty good against the green-white deck. I was not expecting it.
Mob Rule is the one that it's 6 mana, and then you can choose either creatures power 3 and above, or creatures power 2 and above, and then they all get active treason.
3 and above, 2 and above. I think I'll take 2 and above 99% of the time.
I mean,
okay,
you know
so
what
the
I mean.
Actual Mob Rule card is 4 or greater, or 3 or less are the two distinctions.
Well, there we have it.
So, Adrian concedes to me in top 8. I go to top 4, and Adrian's sitting next to me, or sitting next to my opponent, looking at my opponent's hand, and I played this guy, like, round 2 of the Swiss, and he was on mono red, just like the mono red aggro playing Monastery Swiss Spear and, like, Satyr Fire Dancer, Fire Drinker.
You make it sound so shady.
No, it's not shady.
For that was, I positioned Adrian perfectly behind my opponent at an angle where he could see his hand.
No, because
I could see his hand reflected off Adrian's giant stupid glasses.
Whoa! That was unwarranted.
Well, then don't look at your opponent's hand so that he can cheat. That's unwarranted.
Well, anyway, there was no cheating involved. I felt pretty good because I had already beat him in the Swiss. The green-white deck has a pretty good matchup against mono-red just because of all the life gain. So in game one, I keep an opener that's 2 lands. One of them's a temple and a bunch of spells. So I play my temple, scry a non-land to the bottom. Untap, draw a non-land card, play my second land, and never draw another land after that while he proceeds to beat me down. So I was kind of bummed out. Game two comes, and I see another hand almost exactly like game one. And I said, for sure this time I'll draw some lands, because I got a couple of scry lands this time. So, turn one, I play my scry land, scry a non-land card to the bottom. Turn 2, I play my scry land, scry another non-land card to the bottom. All while on my draw step, I did not draw a land card. I don't draw my third land card until turn 4, and by that time I'm already at like 6 life. So I play a Course of Crucifix, reveal a non-land card off the top of my library, pass the turn, he double magma jets my courser, and then hits me with everything that was out on his board, and then, like, some burn spells. So I didn't get to win. I felt really good about the deck, though. I feel like the deck's very, very strong. I just had some bad luck, some bad draws. I don't know what to say. I'm sorry I let you down, Adrian.
Yeah, you totally let me down.
Sorry,
actually,
bro.
Like, not even gonna lie. I'm pretty hurt right now. Just kidding, man. You did fine. And sometimes you just can't win them all, man.
It's true. You can't.
But you sure do lose in top 8 a lot.
Ooh.
Oh my god.
Wow.
It's not true, though. Yeah. You're a top tier, top 8 loser.
You're mad pitcher, dude.
Oh, man.
We gotta break that. There's quite a bit of GPTs coming up.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about it. Like, there's plenty more opportunity for me to get my buys. Like, I have one already. Having a second one would be nice. I think I'll be judging, or at least help judge, another one. And then there's still at least like 4 or 5 more to play in. So I'm not terribly worried. I just want to try and spike one before Vegas actually comes around. Cause I don't want to do any grinders for buys. All right. So that was our weekend. What's up on the docket? Oh, Dragons of Tarkir, the entire set has been spoiled. Are you guys excited?
What's that?
Dragons of Tarkir? That's the new and exciting release from Wizards of the Coast.
What about the new listeners? Okay, you're kind of going towards too, like, specific of a target. People don't understand what Dragons of Tarkir is.
Well, then
let's start
with
that first word. I'm not really, like, dragons.
What is a dragon?
Can we hear a little more on that?
Oh,
I'm a little confused.
What is that?
If you could just explain.
Did you lose to these... You lost this fucker at a GPT?
To be real, though, this limited format's gonna be nutty.
It looks cool. There's a lot of good cards
dragons.
In it. There's a lot of dragons, but there's a lot of cool spells in it too. So what we want to do is our set review.
Oh, no. Nobody told me about this.
So what we're going to do... Is that the Price is Right?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, man. Okay, so what we're going to do is we're going to go over all the spoiled cards. Actually, just the mythics and the rares and then the notable commons and uncommons. And we're going to discuss whether or not these will see play in Standard and if, by chance, they might see play in other formats such as Modern or Legacy. So we're going to start with the mythics, and we're just going to go right down. There's 15 mythics. The first one is Clone Legion. 7 blue-blue, sorcery for each creature target player controls. Put a token onto the battlefield that's a copy of that creature.
I got this one, guys. Everybody just sit down for a second. You sit down right over there. Okay. Legacy play. Omniscience. Hope that your opponent actually has cards out. Done.
No.
Yeah, I'm gonna say no.
I'm gonna say EDH only. For sure.
I'm gonna argue with you. I don't even think this card is good enough to see EDH play.
I don't think so either. Isn't, like, Rites of Replication just way better?
Yeah, like, yeah, around the same cost. To not play that.
Well, Rite lets you choose which thing you want many things of, as opposed to frequently getting copies of things that are pointless.
Alright, well, I'm not a big fan of it, but there's too many cards to argue about, so let's just move on. We're going to go to the next mythic. That is Deathmist Raptor. 1 and 2 green. For a 3/3 lizard beast with death touch, and it says whenever a permanent you control is turned face up, you may return Deathmist Raptor from your graveyard to the battlefield face up or face down, and he has Megamorph for 5. That's 4 and 1 green. I actually think this guy is pretty decent. He's 3 for a 3/3 death touch at worst, or he's 3 for a 2/2 face down, and if you Megamorph him, he's a 4/4 death touch, and then he's got a lot of recursion antics that could happen with him, so I think he's not bad. I think he'll see play in maybe something like a green-white shell. Like, I could see him at least as a one-over, at least in the sideboard of the green-white deck. So I think he's decent. What do you guys think?
I think the lizard beast creature typing shows how far they bend over backwards to not just say dinosaur. And that makes me really sad, because I like to play with dinos, and they won't just say dinosaur. And I think that's probably what keeps me from playing this card. Like, if they just went out and said dinosaur / velociraptor, I would play 20 copies, but as a lizard beast, I don't want any.
I really like your assessment of this card, Eric. Like, I like it as maybe a one or two of in that green-white Mastery of the Unseen deck, where you're kind of getting a lot of the value with the morph flips, but outside of Standard, I don't really see any potential. But it's like you said, at worst he's a 3/3 death touch for 3, and
yeah, and that's not all that terrible.
He has potential, but he's not, like, there's better rares than this mythic. I don't know.
All right, let's go to the next card, Descent of the Dragons. It is 4 and 2 red for a sorcery. It says destroy any number of target creatures. For each creature destroyed this way, its controller puts a 4/4 dragon creature token with flying onto the battlefield. So it's a pseudo red wrath, kind of? Not really? I don't know. What do you guys think?
That looks bad again. I don't like it.
EDH playable.
I don't even think it's EDH playable. Like,
Tiny Leader's playable.
Okay, no. It's got some... I don't know. I could see it being pretty good in, like, a control shell where you're, like, making a lot of tokens with, like, Dragon Fodder and Hordling Outburst after you've already actually controlled the board or, like, wrath them, and then you play this card. Somehow, I don't know. Like, you just overwhelm them with a bunch of 4/4s, and even though they might get, like, 1 or 2, you have, like, 6 or 8. that might be kind of cool, but even then, I'm unsure. Anybody have any other opinions on this?
This, not really. It's to point out, no, it's great. This is another card. I know this card has never wound up with super viable combos, but Battlefield Thaumaturge and Descent of the Dragons likes you double red for any number of targets, because he makes your instants and sorceries cost a colorless less for each target, so you can descent any number of things. So there might be some fun application there.
So we might see it in like a Grixis shell?
Maybe. There's enough. I wonder if at some point there's a critical density of cool things you can do with Battlefield Thaumaturge that make people more inclined to try it. I know in the last format you had some cool things with Aurelia's Fury. This card doesn't have quite the weird effects if you have multiple Thaumaturges, but I think that that's such a corner case that you really shouldn't worry about it. But I could conceivably see a situation where if you're aggressively Dragon Tribal or you're playing who's a what's a commander, you're playing Sign of the Ur Dragon, I could maybe see some situation where an ability to make many whelps would be appealing.
Okay. Or I could see it being potentially played in like a Jeskai Tokens list. That might be kind of cool. That might be where we actually see it. I don't know. But anyway, let's go on to the next card. The next card is Dragon Whisperer. It is double red for a 2/2. Human Shaman. His first ability is one red. Dragon Whisperer gains flying until end of turn. Second ability is Fire Breathing, which is he gets +1/+0 until end of turn for one and a red. And then he also has Formidable, which is 4/2 red. Put a 4/4 dragon creature token with flying onto the battlefield. Activate this ability only if creatures you control have total power 8 or greater. What do you guys think? Like, is it a worse Kargan Dragon Lord, or is it...
Oh my god, yes.
Is it... I don't know.
It's so... I love this type of card. I really, really liked Kargan Dragon Lord. It's absolute... Like, it just feels like it should be the spiritual successor. The art is amazing. I really, really like the art in this card. And it just falls so short because that ability is only until end of turn. I still think it's likely that if you play mono red, this is a card you're absolutely going to consider because it's a 2 mana 2/2 that does other things. But the formidable ability is could have probably just said 6 mana win more. I feel like if you're playing a mono red aggro deck and you have 8 power and toughness on the board, and you have 6 mana to spare for an activated ability, then that game is probably over anyways.
So this guy can by himself activate Formidable, right? I mean, potentially. He could make himself to where he's an 8 power guy, and then you can activate the Formidable ability.
Yeah, so you'd have to activate the ability 6 times to give him 6 power, mana. Which means you need 18 mana. So I'm not quite sure. 18 mana of which... 8 of which has to be red mana, so I'm not exactly convinced that unless you're playing mono red devotion and for some inexplicable reason you're getting an extra free 10 red mana turn after you nick those, really know if anyone's going to be able to do it.
Where I was going with this was that like there are decks in modern like Pyromancer's Ascension or Storm, whatever you want to call it, can generate this amount of mana, right? So, does a deck like that want to see this, or not really?
I would be really concerned about playing, because one of the biggest issues is that, I mean, they don't even have haste, so you could play this card and make a million dragons, and then the result of your turn would be go, and I think that there's still ways that you could not win. A lot of the times you do, but...
But you don't have to do this on your turn, right? Like, Metamorphose is a... Instant is, and I think Seething Song is an instant.
Well, nobody, Seething Song is not legal. The big mana strategy is not really how Storm works anymore in Modern because you don't have Rite of Flame or Seething Song, so you can't really go big. You just generally win by like volume of spells cast and then Grape Shot empty. But.
Okay, well, I don't know.
I would be more inclined to look at this in just some sort of standard mono red thing. Obviously, like, if you've never had to evaluate a card like this before, if you look at its predecessor, Kargan Dragonlord, it's easy to think that it's just a 2-mana 2-2 that has a mild upside. But I feel like history has shown us that 2-mana 2-2s that give you something else to do with your mana in an aggressive strategy tend to be good. Maybe not great, but they're always good because they do different things on different spots in your curve. And that's really desirable in an aggressive strategy where you want to be efficiently using your mana. So because this card has, I would tend to ignore the last ability most of the time, but because this card has two other activated abilities, it's certainly something I want to be considering in that strategy.
Okay.
Like, here's one thing I just want to say. Like, we're getting a lot of comparisons to Kargan Dragonlord, and obviously because it's a 2-red, 2-2 aggro dragon flavor card, but I actually think, like, a closer comparison for this card is, oh man, I'm sorry, I can't remember. He's one in a white mythic from the last set. The Soulfire Grandmaster. Both of these cards are 2-2s for 2 with abilities and with like activated abilities that generate a lot of value on their own. And I just feel like when you compare this to Soulfire Grandmaster, there's just no way you're ever going to generate as much value off of that formidable ability as you already are with another, like, 2-drop mythic. And I know they're not the same color, but they feel very similar in that they could, like, both of them could be candidates for a red-white aggro deck or a Jeskai shell. But there's already, like, I just feel that Soulfire's so much better already that this card, other than mono-red, probably won't see much play in any of the other shells. And there's just a similar card that generates more value.
I tend to agree because I feel that in some way, a lot of times 6 mana is kind of around the threshold where you can buy back Soulfire, and that's when you start generating value. And I feel like the concern with Dragon Whisperer is if 6 mana is that threshold when this 2-mana 2-2 starts generating extra value, when are you finding yourselves in board states where you can also trigger formidable? Like in red-white aggro, my concern would be I feel like the only time that you're actually triggering formidable is probably at some point when you've triggered prowess. And if you've triggered prowess, you probably don't have 6 mana. And Soulfire also has a lot of synergy right now. Like one of the cards that makes it tick is obviously Stoke the Flames, because there's a lot of ways that you can greatly reduce the mana cost to Stoke the Flames so that you can get an early activation of Soulfire. And I don't think, at least in the context of red-white, you're going to be able to quickly cheese Dragon Whisperer's ability and put out a 4-4. If it just was 6 mana put out a 4-4, it might be a slightly different conversation, but I think that on a lot of the formidable cards, at least right now, maybe foreshadowing to Eldrazi in the future, but I think right now some of these are a little difficult to activate.
All right, so we are going to move on because we've spent too much time on that card. And because we have, I feel like this card might be one to watch. So the next card is the first of the Elder Dragons. This is Dragonlord Atarka. Dragonlord Atarka is 5 and a red and a green for a legendary creature Elder Dragon. Atarka is an 8-8 with flying and trample, and it says when Dragonlord Atarka enters the battlefield, it deals 5 damage divided as you choose among any number of target creatures and or planeswalkers your opponents control. The only thing I want to say about this is that it's no Bogarden Hellkite. That's it.
I feel
it
like...
It's very easy, yeah.
Well, I feel like it's not as good as Bogarden Hellkite, absolutely, as far as, like, Eternal formats are concerned. And I also feel like it's maybe not even as good as the Fate Reforged Atarka in, like, a Dragon-style deck, definitely. And there's just too much opportunity to whiff, I think, since you can't even hit your opponent with the damage. So I'd say pretty mediocre.
Okay, so in terms of the dragons, we're going to do dragons versus fate. So the Elder Dragon version versus their fate version, which do you prefer? I prefer Fate Atarka.
Yeah, I agree, 100%.
Will?
I have to go Dragons because it's, yes, it's not Bogarden Hellkite, but it's more of an individual threat. It's more likely to do something, and it has one of the characteristics that I like about big fat creatures is entering the battlefield and doing something. And sometimes you just generate your Dragon Lord Atarka value the turn that you play it, and then you have an 8-8 hanging around.
Okay, so let's go to the next one. The next one is another Elder Dragon. This is Dragon Lord Dromoka. Dromoka is 4 and a green and a white for a 5-7 with flying and lifelink. Dragon Lord Dromoka cannot be countered. Your opponents can't cast spells during your turn.
And flying lifelink.
Right, I said that already.
That little sneaky line in between the two.
No, I said that. That was the first thing I said.
Would you read them out of order then?
Well, I'm sorry, okay? Either way, I like Dragon Lord Dromoka way more than I like Dragon Lord Atarka. And I like Dragon Lord Dromoka way more than I like Dromoka, whatever he was before, in Fate Reforged. So, my pick is Dragons of Tarkir version.
Yes, I agree. It's so much better. So much value.
Because the other one was just like Bolster 3 or something, right?
Well, I will admit, like, the other one in Limited was a 5-5 flying with 5 that bolsters 2 and attacks. Like, I will admit, the other one is a little better in Limited, but this one just overall, way better.
This one will probably actually see constructed play. And
absolutely.
I could see it in something like a Bant shell, like a Bant control shell. And I think it's going to be very good, especially if the control decks are going to get better like we think they are. So this will actually see play probably on the sideboards of not just like Bant, but maybe green-white for sure.
Maybe even Naya with like an explosive vegetation type of ramp build.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is going to see play for sure. So I know I'm going to be picking up my copies of Dragon Lord Dromoka this weekend. I'm going to try anyway. Will, what do you think? Which version do you like better?
Oh my god, it's just the last thing. It reminds me a lot of Sigarda as someone who really likes to play control decks. It has multiple lines of text that really make me hurt on a spiritual level. The can't be countered line, your opponents can't cast spells. It's gonna see more play and it's gonna make me really sad. Like, it's just really, really not what you want to play against as a control deck.
Okay, so you're saying that this version is better than the Fate Reforged version?
It's really, really good. There's a lot of very relevant. No, there are no bad lines. There's
true.
There's not even true. Even you get that like warm flavor text. I mean, everything about this just you've got can't be countered, gross. Flying lifelink, like, okay, suddenly this is also good against an aggressive strategy. You can't play spells during their turn. And then they got the Ohana, Hakuna Matata, Disney, blood ties become a greater family business. If you're like a blue-black control player, if you're the angsty teenager, you hate everything about Dragon Lord Dromoka. This is just a flying, uncounterable Disney dragon.
Okay, so let's move on to our next Dragon Lord. That is Dragon Lord Kolaghan. Dragon Lord Kolaghan is 4, a black, and a red for a 6-5 with flying and haste. He also reads, other creatures you control have haste. Whenever an opponent casts a creature or planeswalker spell with the same name as a card in his or her graveyard, that player loses 10 life. I really like Dragon Lord Kolaghan. I think that this might be good for Grixis, control build. I know that we were discussing before the cast that it seems like every season, every standard rotation, every time a new set comes out for standard, people always try and make Grixis viable again. But this time I think Grixis could actually be good. Like, we have the fetches. We have our win con right here with Dragon Lord Kolaghan. And it doesn't have to be straight control. It could be like Kolaghan plus other stuff to just like beat. Like, this guy with Butcher with like other creatures, like, how awesome would that board state look? You just have all sorts of goodness going on. I like Kolaghan a lot, and I like this version better than the other version. Not only that, I have like a million copies of the other version because I just seem to open them all the time in my Fate Reforged packs.
Yeah, I'm gonna agree. Slight edge to this version of Kolaghan over the Fate Reforged version. I think they're both pretty decent. The last line, I'm not really sure. I mean, your opponent has to walk into it. It's one of those like Singer Vampire style effects where it's like the opponent has to walk into it for it to be good. So, not sure how relevant that is, but giving everything you control haste, I mean, this guy's good. For sure.
I want to go out on a limb and say maybe the third ability is better than the second ability. I feel like a lot of the big creatures in this format, so many of them are dragons, but a lot of them already have haste. Like, within these colors, it's possible you're already playing Stormbreath Dragon. It's possible you're already playing Sarkhan Dragonspeaker. So you have a lot of hasty threats already. I imagine there might be situations where you play Kolaghan as a hasty 6-mana threat, and then your opponent just can't actually play around it because the card that they want to play in this situation is already in their graveyard. And there's actually some interesting applications. Like, when people are putting a lot of cards in the graveyard, or if I'm playing Sultai Control or Sultai Reanimator, there's a possibility that my opponent plays Kolaghan and the shape and color of my hand changes. Because now, if I just took 6, I probably can't take 10. So there might be cards in my hand that are just actually not playable anymore. So I think that it's one of those things where that ability is really hard to evaluate. And I'm curious just to see, like, what percentage of the time in players testing they find somebody has drawn a second copy of a card and you can't do anything about it. Obviously, one of the things that Jay mentioned is there's a little bit of a diminished value on instants, because if you cast Kolaghan, your opponent's going to probably rush some of those instants out of their hand while they get the opportunity to. But I think that if it becomes a present, you might have to be aware of it. Like, you might have to think about Kolaghan. And I think that could be interesting.
Okay, so final verdict. Better or worse than the Fate Reforged version?
Definitely better. I haven't seen a Fate Reforged version of Kolaghan show up anywhere. So this one has more potential. And he looks like gnar as fuck in that art.
Okay. Let's go on to our next dragon. That's Dragon Lord Ojutai. This is my favorite dragon. Ojutai is 3, a white and a blue for a 5/4 flyer. Dragonlord Ojutai has hexproof as long as it's untapped. Whenever Dragonlord Ojutai deals combat damage to a player, look at the top 3 cards of your library, put one of them into your hand and the rest on the bottom of your library in any order. So it's like a pseudo preordain ponder every time you attack. What do you guys think of this? Right now, Star City has him at $6. I think he's way underpriced right now. I think this is the finisher that Blue-White Control was looking for. And I think we're going to see, like, Blue-White Control shells come up and Blue-White or Esper shells come up. And I like Ojutai so much more now that he's, like, a monk dragon than whatever he was before. So, yes, Ojutai for sure, my favorite dragon in all of dragons, and I definitely think he's way better than his predecessor.
I agree. I think this card is probably the best dragon. I like it more than Solemgar, Kolaghan, and Atarka, and it's really close with Dromoka. And, I mean, obviously, there's no question it's better than the old version. I think this card's just great. I mean, you get to protect it. Basically, you play it, and when you untap next turn, it's gonna have hexproof until you untap. And at that point, you're able to protect it. So, yeah, definitely a very, very strong control finisher. And the 5 power is just great. I mean, I think it brings it a step above the old Silumgar with the 3 power, which is just kind of like, oh, this is going to take a while to finish them. But this guy finishes them pretty quickly.
I think one of the positive sides of this card that can't be understated, it's 5 mana, and it does a lot of the things that I really would want a 6 mana control finisher to do. It's difficult to answer. It draws cards. I just kind of sometimes assume when I look at this that this is six like a lot of the other ones, but it comes down early. Like, it, you can't really understate the difference between five and six, and this gives you an opportunity to play a finishing card, a card that could win you the game or give you way too much card selection.
Like, let's be honest here. I think I could see myself paying seven mana for this dragon and still be fine with it.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know.
It's an ability, and it's in the stat territory where I frequently find myself assuming that it's six mana, and then I keep coming back to, like, wow.
Well, I mean, like, people play Pearl Lake Ancient, and that thing's, like, infinite mana.
But also, like, infinitely difficult to deal with.
This one is still pretty hard to deal with. It's not... It doesn't have the same evasion.
It can't be as hard to deal with as Pearl Lake because it's a lot earlier.
And then
I just think that all you gotta do
is suit up Dragonlord Ojutai with Spectra Ward and then you just win, right?
Please don't do that.
You got it.
I just think that the fact that it's five means that sometimes you're playing it on a turn where sometimes you're playing it on a turn where your opponent has to think about how it affects combat. And how it has hexproof, and they can't really swing into it the way that they wanted to. And it's, having played a lot of like various blue-white control lists, five mana threats are really, really, like, have a lot of potential power. If your Batterskulls or your Gideon Juras or hopefully your Dragonlord Ojutais can come down early to put away a game.
So, okay, in all seriousness, Swiftfoot Boots was printed in Zendikar block. If that card gets reprinted again in the return to Zendikar block, I can see Dragonlord Ojutai being a real big problem.
I mean, there's a lot of the dragons are particularly strong. I mean, in that context. Dramoka is really dumb if it's not targetable and has haste. That seems probably more abusive. But
yeah, you're probably right. But I like Ojutai so much.
I think that,
and the art on Ojutai is just insane too. Like, look at that art.
It's sick. It is really, these dragon arts, Tark is a little bit of a letdown, but these dragon arts have really, really nice stuff going on.
Yeah, that's good. Adrian, what do you think about Ojutai?
I like it. I like it a lot. I like it, for the fact that it's in blue-white. And I'm really, really, really excited that it's not as bad as the other Ojutai, who is basically a Frost Breath. And I know that me and you, Eric, were talking about what, like, a blue-white control deck, and I think we found our finisher.
Oh,
and
it's just
infinitely better than, what were we forcing Prognostics?
Oh, God, like, I couldn't stand when people were trying to make that. Like, this is what I want from a five mana card.
I agree. Yeah. And then with all the Valorous Dances and the Stoke the Flames going around, I don't think it's going to be oppressive whatsoever. The control player is going to have to be a little bit more careful about what counter spells they hold up. They can't just blindly swing this in and win. It's not like a... It's not an auto win like when Aetherling came down in the last format.
Right.
So you still have to play pretty smart when you resolve an Ojutai.
Okay, so let's go to the next dragon, and he's the final of the Elder Dragons, and that's Dragonlord Silumgar. We've already talked about him before on the cast, but just to remind you guys, he is a 4 and a blue and a black, so that's 6 mana for a 3/5 with Flying and Death Touch, and it says when Dragonlord Silumgar enters the battlefield, gain control of target creature or planeswalker for as long as you control Dragonlord Silumgar. I've already stated how I feel about this guy. I love him. I think he's awesome. He's got flying, he's got death touch, and he's got Sword of Temptation for creatures or planeswalkers. I like him a lot. He gets around a lot of removal, and I think he's perfect costed for what he does.
I like the other one better. I'm gonna go with Fate Silumgar. I like that hexproof too much, I think.
And I'm gonna have to go with you, or I have to agree with Jay here. Fate Silumgar is so much better than this one. Just, I don't know, like, Fate Silumgar is so much harder to deal with when it resolves.
Sadly, I have to continue the ganging up on Eric. I liked this card the first time I saw it, because I was kind of looking at the Esper direction, and it's probably not the kind, it's probably not a better finisher than Ojutai, so now it's in the awkward spot of not, like, being an incomparable or maybe slightly worse than the previous incarnation of it at the same mana cost, which is not helpful. Because you can actually look at them. Like, some of the other dragons don't cost what they cost last time, so it's a different analysis. But Silumgar has the same mana cost, and I don't know if the format is just going to be completely devoid of X1s, which is the other half of previous Silumgar's value, is that he keeps threatening that aspect. Whereas, sometimes I feel like there's just so much Hero's Downfall, or various, as Adrian mentioned, or Valorous stances, that I'm just worried about playing him and then being like, oh boy, and then your opponent's like, end of turn, kill your dude.
But he's got Tassigar on his chain.
That's like a reason cool to hate. I like Tassigar. I'm like, I'm upset. Rip Tassigar. Like, let's have a moment of silence for a cool dude.
He died
dude
like 1,000 years ago.
Like, I think it'd be pretty cool if, flavor-wise, you couldn't play Tassigar in the same deck as you could play this guy. Or if you did play Tassigar, he'd be shaking in his boots, looking at an alternative future timeline.
Does Tassigar wear boots?
Like, which card would you rather play, Tassigar or this card, if you could only choose one in, like, a blue-black control?
I mean, the answer's obviously Tassigar, but I still like this guy, even though he might not be, like, exactly what we want, and he could definitely be better. He's still very good, and I think his ability is still very relevant in Standard right now. But let's move on. Let's go to the next card. This is the first of our Planeswalkers. This is Narset Transcendent. Adrian, you called it, man. She is now a Planeswalker.
Dude, I told you guys, and I am not disappointed whatsoever.
She's good, right? Like,
I
so
am super excited to play her. I've been on Jeskai since, like, the beginning of cons, and I don't know, man, this is what I wanted. I don't know if it's gonna go in the control shells, but I guess having two end hostilities back to back is pretty damn good.
Okay, but so let's tell everyone what she does. So Narset Transcendent costs 2, a white and a blue. She comes in with 6 loyalty. Her first ability is +1. Look at the top card of your library. If it's a non-creature, non-land card, you may reveal it and put it into your hand. Her -2 is when you cast your next instant or sorcery spell from your hand this turn, it gains rebound. That's a super relevant ability. And then finally, her ultimate is -9, and it says you get an emblem with your opponents can't cast non-creature spells. She's good, man, and she's great in control. I think that you're wrong, Adrian. She's going to be in all the blue-white control decks, and she's going to see a lot of play.
There's just the one of the things about this card is that when that the -2 ability that gives the next instant or sorcery that you cast from your hand this turn rebound, there's just a lot of different applications for that ability, which might make Narset see a lot of different play. Like, if you're a Jeskai player, you might be looking at this ability and just seeing, you know, the ability to play Stoke the Flames twice, and maybe not even tap your mana. Like, maybe you convoke for Stoke, and then you Stoke. Or maybe there's a board state where you convoke and buy back with, well, I guess buyback gets a little awkward, but you might be looking from the burn spell perspective. If you're a control player, maybe you're thinking about, Adrian mentioned, pseudo time walking somebody with board wipe spell. Maybe you're looking at just casting anticipate and anticipating twice. Maybe you're really swinging for the fences and you're looking to cast dig through time. I mean, there's just a lot of different, whether it's card draw, whether you're in, I mean, I mentioned on our previous, what you get into Esper and you start playing removal spells. What if you play her and then you're copying Silumgar's command and your opponent doesn't really have a board state that lets you play around that? I think there's a lot of different situations. It's important to note that modal cards will let you re-choose modes the second time that you go. I think that there's just a lot of awkward situations. I think there may be even applications to, in a control mirror, if she resolves, -2 duress your opponent. I mean, I do not want to be duressed twice in a control mirror, and even knowing that it's coming doesn't sometimes mean that you can play around it. Like, sometimes telegraphing that what your next spell is going to happen is of no consequence. Sometimes double ultimate prize, double hero's downfall is going to generate a lot of value, regardless of whether or not you just hold up a sign.
So this might be a little far out there, but am I wrong in assuming that you can potentially lock your opponent out by casting Temporal Trespass after -2ing Narset?
I don't think they're any more locked out, depending on the board state, than if you cast
abilities. Part of Temporal Trespass's resolution says exile.
But it gains rebound. And rebound makes you exile anyway, so that's a layers question.
Well, you get to take 2 turns.
Yeah, right? you do get to rebound on your...
But it's not any more, like, locking out.
You don't necessarily lock out, because you're still gonna exile. It's just...
Well, I mean, so you're gonna take 2 turns, that's 3 turns that you're taking in a row. That's pretty good. I don't know. I mean, like, you could do a lot in those turns.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's true. And also, that Temporal Trespass costs 11. So...
Right, but I mean, like, instead of devoting all of your delve to Dig Through Time, and you're just splashing, like, 1 or 2 Temporal Trespass, it could be really good. Like, if you get hit with that, I don't see any reason why you can't win a game after taking 2 extra turns in a row.
Just for a clarification, because we haven't seen, like, the wording on rebound before, but rebound kind of basically says if it would have gone to the graveyard, you exile it instead to rebound it. But because Temporal Trespass, part of its effect says exile Temporal Trespass, it won't rebound if you -2 Narset and cast Temporal. It'll exile itself to its own effect, and then you will not get a chance to rebound it.
No!
Yeah, so like any of those, like I guess some other applications are cards that shuffle themselves into your library, like a Green Sun Zenith. If you rebound it, like that kind of stuff, if it would change zones. Or that means also with Soulfire, one of those things happens, but not both of them. I mean, I think that makes more sense to people, like attempting to rebound from your hand would be weird, but... That's an example. Like, you can't turn the card around in your hand and be like, I'm gonna take another turn.
Okay, so, well, whatever. My final verdict is she's awesome. She's $50 on Star City. I don't know if she's worth that much. Look at Sarkhan. He was $50 and now he's like 10. So, I think her price will probably go down, but I'm not sure how much of the set's actually gonna get open, so, I don't know. But either way, she's still really good and I'll still be looking to pick up some copies.
Real quick, like, do you think 6 starting loyalty is a little oppressive for, like, aggro decks?
No, well, so, the argument is that planeswalkers are rated as good if they have the ability to protect themselves, right? Well, Narset does not have the ability to protect herself, but she does in the sense that she starts out with 6 loyalty. So, she can go unprotected and still survive in many cases.
Yeah, I just want to see it, I guess, in practice. Like, it seems harsh, but we'll see. I mean, I think it's just that she's really good. It's, you know, obviously.
Oh yeah, no doubt. Like, I can't wait to double Dig Through Time. I can't wait to double Treasure Cruise. I can't wait to double Thoughtseize or Duress. I can't wait to double, anything. Like, just, like, there are no bad spells to double on. Like, if you do End Hostilities, Or a sweeper like that, you're essentially time walking your opponent anyway because they don't want to cast another spell into, or another creature into another End Hostilities that's going to come out for free anyway. So I like him. I like Narset a lot. Okay, so let's go to the next mythic. That's going to be Ojutai Exemplars. This one reads, actually it's two and two white for a 4/4. Whenever you cast a non-creature spell, choose one. Tap target creature or Ojutai Exemplars gains first strike and lifelink until end of turn, or Ojutai Exemplars then, exile Ojutai Exemplars, then return it to the battlefield tapped under its owner's control. What do you guys think of this card?
It's really hard to assess. A lot of different modes. I think that there's always, it's hard to gauge. I feel like a lot of people's hesitancy is, how many non-creature spells are you playing after you play your 4-drops? But, I don't know, I think the most interesting application to me is actually as a control card. Not as, like, a Jeskai tempo card.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, after two, I think everyone can agree, really amazing white mythic, like, monk creatures in the last set. I think this one just cannot possibly live up to those two, at least definitely not in the same application. Mentor, I feel like, is just, it's only one ability, but I feel that ability is better than all three of these. So, I don't know, it's tough to be paying for, I think, for this, and then potentially not even untapping with it. And then potentially not even winning the game off of the abilities, I mean. So, kind of lackluster for me.
I personally think that Jeskai Control will see this as a finisher alongside the Ojutai Dragon. I just think it's good. Burning out one creature, tapping out another creature to get in for whatever you have available seems really good. The first strike and lifelink ability is definitely relevant. The last one maybe not so much, but who knows, it might be relevant. After the next set or after rotation, it definitely evades any wrath type effects as long as you have a spell in your hand. So I think it's good. I think it'll see play.
Does not evade wrath. It comes back into play right away. It's like Restoration Angel. So it will still die to wrath effects.
Oh man, I'm so bad at this. I'm so bad at reviewing cards.
But it's definitely another card on the long list of, when we talk about common cards that matter. Another card on the long list of cards that really appreciates the printing of Anticipate.
True. Very true. Adrian, what do you think?
I'm just gonna say that this is the first time in a long time that I've actually been excited for a third set. I know it's off topic, but I definitely have to tell you guys that. Like, weren't you not excited for Journey into Nyx? You're just like, meh, whatevs. And it's weird. Like, this is the first time I'm effing Dragon's Maze was such a disappointment.
Yeah.
And Journey into Nyx, such a disappointment. And now, like, Dragons of Tarkir, I'm excited for, like, the third expansion.
Well, that's good because it is the last third set that we're ever gonna have for a long while, right? So.
But it's cool though.
Yeah, it's good. Like, they're going out with a bang. Like, it looks good. It's gonna be pretty popular. And I can't wait to go to the pre-release.
Like, the limited format sounds fun, or it just looks fun. Like, with Dragon's Maze, at that point, you were just so damn tired of picking a guild. But yeah, I don't know. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Okay, so let's go to the next mythic that we have on the list. This is Risen Executioner. This is 2 and 2 black for a 4/3 zombie warrior. Risen Executioner can't block. Other zombie creatures you control get +1/+1. And it says you may cast Risen Executioner from your graveyard if you pay one more to cast it for each other creature card in your graveyard. Aside from it being a zombie lord, I don't think it's that great. I don't think it has any standard implications. However, I think it has a lot of casual implications for the people that like their zombie decks. It'll probably see a lot of play in EDH. Definitely not see any play in Modern or Legacy.
I agree. 100%. Maybe we should move on.
Anyone else take a different stance on this?
I think that the last ability really cripples the card. I think that most of the decks that want to play this card, you just wind up with other creature cards in your graveyard through some means, and then suddenly this guy doesn't actually replay himself at all.
Alright, so let's go to our last Planeswalker of the set. This is Sarkhan Unbroken. Sarkhan Unbroken costs 2 and Teemer. That's 1 green, 1 blue, 1 red. He comes in with 4 loyalty. His first ability is draw a card, then add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. Second ability is -2, put a 4/4 red dragon creature with a red dragon token creature with flying onto the battlefield. -8, search your library for any number of dragon creature cards and put them onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library. We already talked about him on the last cast. I don't like him. I think regular old red Sarkhan is way better. This guy might see play in like a dragon-themed EDH deck or something like that. I don't see him seeing play in Modern, don't see him seeing play in Legacy, and don't see him seeing too much play in Standard.
I think he has potential for Standard, and I think I really like his flavor. I might try and brew something up. But yeah, he's not as good as Red Sarkhan. Like, if you're playing him, you are basically admitting you're playing him for the flavor, which is not always a bad thing. It's not the most spike thing to do, but I think he's still pretty cool. Just not as good as the red one. I mean, what else can you say?
I think that he's probably going to go the way of a Johnny Steadfast and just not see much play. The only thing I like from him is that he -2s and makes a 4/4 dragon. That's kind of cool. But I'm not excited about Sarkhan. He is definitely unbroken. But I think we made that joke before.
He's living proof of why you don't meddle with time travel. You go back in time, butterfly effect, and you ruin Sarkhan. Like, this is why you don't do it, kids. This is why all the science fiction movies say you don't mess with timelines, because you become a bad magic card.
Well, he's an orphan of time now, right?
Yeah, he, like, unbirthed himself. Like, don't do that. That's bad. You, poof yourself out of existence, which is basically what Sarkhan is going to do. He's going to poof himself out of Standard.
All right, so let's go to the next mythic. That is Shaman of the Forgotten Ways, or Shaman of Forgotten Ways. Costs 2 and a green for a 2/3 human shaman. You can tap to add 2 mana in any combination of colors to your mana pool. Spend this mana only to cast creature spells, and then he has Formidable 9 and 2 green for basically Biorhythm. We talked about this guy on the last cast, I think. Not good. I don't like him. Don't see why he's $8. I just don't like him.
I feel like his formidable ability is pretty much completely irrelevant, just too highly costed, and just the 8 power on top of everything just is gonna make it bad, but I'm not even sure he's, terrible just off of his first ability as a 2/3 with the ability to tap for 2 mana. I mean, it's not awful.
You can only spend it on creatures, though. Keep that in mind.
Yeah, I understand. There's still plenty of, like, new dragons and cool things to accelerate into. I think he'll see a little bit of play. I think just because his bottom ability is, you know, unusable, I still think he might see a little bit of play.
I think he's wearing the least practical helmet I've ever seen in my life. It's like got 4 antler horns, and it's very confusing. I don't know whether that offers him more balance.
You think he gets stuck on trees when he's like running through the
Maybe.
Forest?
Maybe, it just seems super impractical. That's probably why he keeps forgetting where he's going, is because he has this stupid thing on his head.
Alright, so the last mythic of the set is Shorecrasher Elemental. He costs 3 blue for a 3/3 Elemental. His first ability is 1 blue, exile Shorecrasher Elemental, then return to the battlefield face down under its owner's control. His second ability is 1 colorless, Shorecrasher Elemental gets +1/+1, or -1/+1 until end of turn, and he has Megamorph for 4 and a blue. So this card single-handedly caused a spike in the price of Master of Waves. Do we think that Mono Blue Devotion will be a deck that we're going to have to play against again or not? Also, how good is this card? I don't think he's that good.
I think he actually is good with Master of Waves support, but I think, like, they kind of messed up with that Megamorph. If you're exiling this guy to save him, you're not wanting to pay 5 just to flip him up and then have another blue if they try and kill him again. I just feel like he'd be better without the morph. It's just, if he just exiled and then returned. So.
Right, well then he'd be very playable if he did that. But well, like, you exile him, he comes back face down, you're losing out on 3 devotion, which is what the decks want, right? And then you gotta invest 5 mana to flip him over to gain 3 devotion back. I don't see it being very profitable in the long run. I don't think he's very good.
We'll have to see. I mean, with Master Waves, anything is possible. That guy's ridiculous, so we'll just have to see.
Don't ever lose faith in the Master of Babes. There's a lot of devotion, too. Like, this is... You lose your Night Veil Spectres, but this is all... That's a lot of blue symbols.
Okay, so let's go on to the rares. We're gonna run through the rares really, really quickly now. Real quick, we're just gonna name off the rares and whether we like them or not and where they'll see play. First one is Anafenza Kintry Spirit. I think she's really good. I think she'll see a lot of play, not only in Standard, but probably in Modern and even Legacy to some extent. So that's where I'm at with her.
Like her. Definitely Standard. Probably Modern. I'm not sure about Legacy, but yeah, like her a lot.
Will, Adrian.
I'm sad that, like, it's nice to see these reworked ones, but why did it have to be Anafenza? Why couldn't they kill stupid Zergo?
Dude, Zergo... damn Zergo. Just go.
Okay, next card. Erishin Foremost. I don't think it's that good. It might see play in, like, the heroic decks, maybe, but... I don't think it's that good. It's not gonna be very standard playable, let alone any other format.
It's way too cute. It's too cutesy. Just trying to make
it's
warrior.
It's like a bad Silver Blade Paladin.
Yeah.
It would be a good Silver Blade Paladin if it didn't have the warrior claws. Ah, that warrior claws really clips the wings on this card.
I mean, it could potentially see a lot of play in the warrior tiny leaders deck. But even then, meh. Okay, next card. Erishin Sovereign. This is a dragon that doesn't do a lot that I like, so I don't like it.
He's cute. That's about it. He's super cute.
Yeah, he's a chubby dragon.
Dude, he reminds me of the really fat dragon from How to Train Your Dragon. You just want to hug him. That's all. He sucks, though.
I'm definitely getting some puff vibes from Erishin.
Alright, next card, Assault Formation. This card seems kind of good. I don't know yet. I'm undecided on it. I think for sure it will not see play in Modern or Legacy, although it may have some standard implications. I'm just not sure yet. So
Alright, hear me out on this. Then we're gonna get to that card down there called Collected Company. This has been thrown at me. You run a Doran Siege Tower. Yoked Ox, Assault Formation, boom, deck.
So you're saying Tiny Light Leaders, Tiny Leaders
nope,
wants
not
this.
Even Tiny Leaders, Modern.
Ew, no.
Next Pro Tour, we'll be there.
Stop it.
Nope. Okay, the command cycle we already went through on the last cast, we gave our opinions on those. The last one that we didn't get to see was Silumgar's Command. What do we think about that one? I like it. I think it's going to be playable for sure in Standard and nothing else.
Agree. With the, I guess, I don't like it, but I do think it's good. I'll say that.
It's got a lot of imminent 2-for-1 potential. Like, there's a lot of different ways that it combines for 2-for-1s.
Okay, next card. Avatar of the Resolute. I like this card in, like, a Gruul-type deck. It's no Stranglerout Geist, but it's close. It's not terrible. It has a couple of abilities that are relevant, and I think it might actually see play. Like, 2 for a 3/2 seems really good, and kind of tough to deal with at times. So, yeah, I think it'll see some play.
I'm really hoping that we're getting closer and closer to seeing the old Selesnya aggro deck again. I think the cards are there, and I think with this new set, we're seeing more cards that are able to fit into that shell. So maybe Soldier of Pantheon will see play again with this card. So I'm kind of excited about this double green 3/2.
Okay, next card. Berserker's Onslaught. My evaluation is that it is a casual card only. It's going to be a bulk rare, but it's going to be pretty good and limited.
Yeah. Limited bomb, nothing else, really.
Okay, next card is Blessed Reincarnation. I haven't even seen this card yet. Exile target creature an opponent controls. That player reveals cards from the top of his or her library until a creature card is revealed. That player puts that card onto the battlefield, then reshuffles the rest into his or her library, and then it's got rebound. So it's a blue pseudo removal spell, kind of. I don't know how good it'll be. Probably not that good.
If you could polymorph your own things, I would really like this card, because it had rebound, and it would let you, like, get around a missed polymorph. But you can only polymorph your opponent's things. So I feel like that loses some of the fun value.
Yep, not that good. Okay, so let's go to the next one. The next one is Blood Chin Fanatic. This guy's a warrior. He'll see play in the warrior decks, but probably nothing else. He's very warrior flavored. I think that standard will have a better warrior deck because of cards like this, although I don't see the warrior deck being very viable in a tournament meta.
So I have an opinion on these, on the Bloodchin Fanatic. I like these kind of cards because they really get Magic players interested into building decks. They see that all the pieces are there, and it kind of leads them into deck building, and it kind of leads them into getting into more serious Magic. And I think these cards, like all the warrior-based tribal cards that we've seen between Dragons, or between Fate, what the hell is Cons, to now, are kind of like gateway archetypes for these players to see. And I'm just like super excited because I know that a lot of players, especially at our local shops around here, some of the newer players got into competitive Magic by playing this warrior deck. So I'm kind of excited about this card.
All right, Boltwing Marauder. That's another dragon. Meh, I don't like it that much. Again, it'll be a limited bomb, I could see it being a limited bomb, but nothing else.
I agree. Limited bomb, it's worse than Kolaghan, so it won't see, like, any kind of constructed spot.
Okay, let's go on to Collected Company. This card has a lot of people talking on the internet right now. A lot of people like this card. I'm eager to see what people are going to do with it. I'm not sure what the next set's going to give us in terms of, like, Eldrazi. So we might see, like, decks like this that want Collected Company for little dudes, or we might see decks like Scythian Written for ways to cheat out Eldrazi. So I don't know. I think for now it's fine, but I don't know.
I actually think Modern playable, like, it's a lot of value for 4 at instant speed in a creature-based deck, so I really like this card. I think it's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, in Modern, being able to get 2 Tarmogoyfs out or something to that effect, like a Tarmogoyf and a Dark Confidant, or a Tarmogoyf and a Vanillion Click, like, those are all really good things to get.
The most common application I've heard people talk about is the Eternal Witness Court of Calling Kiki Resto deck. I've heard people talk about Collected Company as a cheaper way to dig for cards.
Yeah, that sounds cool. Like, couldn't get Pestermite and Deceiver Exarch into play, and then that's a little too much for the opponent to deal with once you try and put the enchantment down.
Did you guys mention Green-White Hate Bearers?
It has a lot of potential for Modern. It has a $5 price tag on it already at presale. I can see it going up, and I can see the foils of this card being somewhere in the vicinity of like $15 to $20. So it'll be fine.
So maybe if I was peeps out there, maybe grab a playset and they might go up a little bit, but don't go into it too heavily.
I would say pick up your foils this weekend if you can.
Pick up your foils and send them to me.
No one ever sends you anything, Adrian. Don't even bother trying anymore. All right, next card, Commune with Lava. What do you think about this card? I think that it might be good.
Wait, did he just ask himself? And are you answering yourself?
Yeah, yeah.
That was cool.
Well, I mean,
over the edge, man.
I don't know what
he's
to think.
Ascended. He's enlightened now.
Like, it gets worse the more mana you put into it, right? Because then
yeah,
you can't put
say
mana
not
in.
Good.
I mean, you increase the likelihood that you're gonna hit the cards that you want. It's just, I know that some people talked about, could you play Commune with Lava in Storm, but it's really just a lot of mana in Modern. I think it would be more interesting to see, like, in Standard. I think there's situations where maybe playing this card for, like, 4 means that you... And I don't really feel like... If you have enough mana to draw a ton of cards with this, you probably have enough mana to win the game. That's how I feel.
Yeah, I agree. I think that it's... In Standard, it's good with Scry, but... That's really about it. Like, it doesn't excite me very much. So, let's go to the next card. The next card is Corpse Weft. I don't know. It's a zombie card. People like zombies. I think that this card's only okay, but I can definitely see this being in a deck that, will kind of take people by surprise.
If you get taken by surprise by this card, then you deserve to die to the giant zombie horror hitting you. Because if you let your opponent fill up their graveyard, exile their graveyard, and pass turn, or you let their opponent play Corpse Weft and you don't know anything about it, then you fully deserve to take the 20 damage.
Well, I mean, like, if the opponent's doing that anyway, wouldn't they just play Empty the Pits? Isn't that just strictly better than this card?
This card's cheaper, though. Empty the Pits does... require you, like, Empty the Pits does mandate a lot of black mana. Like, this card potentially is just 5 mana to play it and threaten it. It takes a lot of creature cards. Like, you'd be surprised how many creature cards it takes to make a reliable threat. Like, ideally you want to just activate this and kill somebody. I don't think you want to waste time. So, your opponent probably needs to be at a low life total, or you need your library and your graveyard.
Okay, Crater Elemental. Not good, right?
Terrible.
Terrible.
Next card. Damnable Pact.
Wait, Crater Elemental is the card that looks like a bugle.
Yes, it does look
I
like
love
a bugle.
It. It looks like a... I would eat Crater Elemental.
Bugle Elemental.
I would eat the shit out of that card.
Well, except that it has like 4 legs, right?
That's just extra bugles, like little tiny mini bugles to go with your major bugle. This is actually like, I've had this nightmare before where I ate too many bugles and I stayed up too late drinking soda pop and then I had the bugle nightmare. And this is what attacked me.
What a dork. Okay, Damnable Pack. I like this card.
It's super flexible.
That's kinda how I feel too. Like, I can't tell if it's actually gonna be good or not. Historically, do we have cards like this that get a lot of play?
Mind Twist?
Never a lot. Maybe a little bit. Oh, no discard. Just drain life, but they draw cards.
Well, so,
this normally wants to be self-targeted, I feel.
What? Self-targeted? I don't know. I don't think so. I will
do you
be
not like
looking.
Drawing cards? How is there any hesitation?
Oh.
What have you been doing?
No,
this isn't a good drain life choice. I think drain life is just better because you gain life. And they don't draw.
I totally just noticed that it's a draw card. I thought it was a discard card.
No, my God.
Oh, no. This isn't... No.
Yeah. I'm barely joining. I'm so tired. Okay, so Damnable Pact, probably good. No, it's probably good. I definitely want one for my Alloro EDH deck, so there's that. Okay,
wait. Play EDH?
Yeah, absolutely.
Ew.
You ew. Okay, next card, Deathbringer Regent. We can go along with all the regents on this and say what we want about them. I am not sure. I don't think that very many of the regents are good, although I will admit that I think that some of them will see play. I'm just not sure which ones yet. I think for now, all the regents are just going to be kind of extra bulk rares until they find a home.
I actually think this one's pretty playable. Destroying all other creatures is... pretty strong. I mean, Reaver Demon was always pretty good back in the day, so not terrible.
Okay, next card is Den Protector. I don't like him.
Who's you, whore?
I mean, he's okay. He's a lot more mana intensive to be Eternal Witness than I would like, but meh.
Yeah, but when was Eternal Witness potentially unable to be blocked? I think this is like, if I'm playing Green Aggro, I really like this card.
I don't think that you were trying to win games with Eternal Witness. I think that first ability doesn't even matter.
Well, I think that this card isn't supposed to be Eternal Witness. I think it's supposed to be a Green Aggro card, or it's in Gruul Aggro, and you morph it, and then you swing through, and then your opponent, like, can't block with their Caryatid because you went up to three, or they can't block with their Courser because you went up to three power, and they're still at two power, and then you're buying back, like, your Lightning Strike or something. I think that's the application of this card.
All right. Dragon Tempest, what do we think about this? I am not a fan. I don't like it. It'll be great and limited, I think, but that's about it.
I'm gonna have to go with you. I don't like this card as well. That's it. It's ugly.
I feel like the downside of this effect is it's gonna be so small before you ever get off the ground and you're dealing lots of damage. The only funny thing is if you cast the Mythic and then you get like five or six triggers at once. That's when Dragon Tempest is cool. But outside of that, it's gross.
Okay, next card is Dragon Lord's Prerogative. This is the dragon-based, opportunity. I mean, I think it's fine as opportunity. I don't think that it's fine as a rare opportunity, but it is what it is. It'll still see some play, probably. Although we do have Dig Through Time in this format, so I don't see where it would see play. So I don't know. I think, ultimately, this isn't the right time to reprint a card like this because of Dig Through Time. But I could still see it seeing play as like a one of in the control decks.
Seems pretty meh.
Okay.
It's no Sphinx's Revelation.
So the next one is Foe Razor Regent. We already went through all the regents, so let's go on to the next one. Foul Renewal. I don't like it. I think it's another bulk card.
Turn, what does it do? Return target creature from graveyard to your hand. Target creature gets -6/-6.
I think it's pretty narrow application. Like, it only works in certain situations. It only works on certain creatures. I would be stoked if it put it into play, but for the most part, I think that, yeah, there's a lot of whiffs. You know, you gotta return a card to kill a Siege Rhino. You need a card with 5 toughness, but what 5 toughness cards in Sultai do you want back in your hand and not in your graveyard?
Okay, Gleam of Authority. I think this is another card that Blue White Heroic wants. I still don't think Blue White Heroic is going to be a good deck, even with this card.
Nope. I don't like it at all. We've been playing Blue White Heroic. Does this look like a card we want?
No, because you have to extend onto the board. It's each other +1/+1 counter, which is not what I want to be doing in Heroic at all. I want to be able to go one or two creatures. I don't want, you know, three or four dudes with counters on them.
Okay. So, what about Harbinger of the Hunt? I kind of like this guy, but only kind of.
I like his potential to fight the token-based strategies a lot, and I think he'll see play.
Denote him as a, I agree with Jay. I think he's got some sleeper potential. I think that you're very likely to get to activate that ability twice, and I think that means that there's definitely some board states where he comes out really far ahead. If I'm playing red white aggro, this guy could mop up my board if I don't have a lightning strike or a stoke for him, like, immediately. And oddly dodges in a weird way, like, dies the lightning strike, but does dodge,
Wild Slash?
Valorous. Valorous Stance.
When I look at this card, it reminds me of, like, for some reason I just get this, that, like, the art and everything really reminds me of old Magic. When I was little, and I would see, like, the older players playing Magic. I don't know. Does it give anybody else that feeling too? Or am I alone on that?
It doesn't give me that feeling, but I can see where you would get that.
Yeah.
Alright, so next card is Haven of the Spirit Dragon. I think we already went over this card, and I think it was another card where I liked it a lot, but no one else did.
I liked it. I agreed with you on this one.
Okay.
I think it's exactly what the control decks want.
Yes.
But I don't see it as a 4-of, because you said something like 4-of, and I was like, dog.
No, I definitely did not say 4-of, but I
did.
No,
he did, huh? Everybody heard you. No. Nope. Don't lie.
This is an 88. This is a Sign of the Ur-Dragon card only, in my opinion.
No, no, no. I think it's got a lot of standard implications, and it's definitely got EDH implications, of course. But nothing else. Okay, so next card, Hedonist Trove. This card is... I could see it being a combo card, but I don't see the combo.
Nope.
Yeah, they protected a lot of these cards from their combo potential by saying target opponent.
Yeah.
Which makes it very difficult to control.
They don't want another Yogg-Will going around, so I don't think it's very good.
Okay. Hidden Dragon Slayer is the next card. I kind of like this card. He's not like great or anything like that, and I'm not saying everyone go pick up your Dragon Slayers, but Jaime Lannister is probably pretty good.
I really
That's the mountain, dude. Look at that beard.
I don't know.
Lannister never looked like that.
You're a little off on your
Do you guys like the art on that? I don't like it.
It's a little weird, yeah.
I think it looks like Jaime Lannister.
And it looks like he has one leg.
What? He's not even blonde.
What?
No.
Yeah, what Jaime Lannister fan are you looking at?
No, I mean, like, you can get his hair altered to be blonde, and he would look just like Jaime Lannister.
Well, I mean, if you're going to go that far.
Jaime Lannister doesn't have a humongous beard.
He did when he was, like, being taken captive.
Does he know?
Alright, let's move on.
Okay, the next one is another regent, so we don't have to go there. After that is Illusory Gains.
Isn't this just domestication?
It is just domestication.
But whenever a creature enters the battlefield under an opponent's control, it just swaps over?
It's a domestication that they can play around by just playing another creature. Like, you steal their Monastery Mentor, and then they go to combat with, like, Gravelmaster, or they play Hordling Outburst, and you're like, well, that sucked.
Yeah, it's not very good.
It does keep moving, which is interesting, but yeah, they have an out to it on the card.
Okay, Ire Shaman. No.
Would you pick this card over Mardu Scout right now in a mono red deck?
Over Mardu Scout?
Yes? Yes, yeah, I'm definitely. Gonna say yes. This Mardu Scout good. Versus those tokens.
Yeah.
So then I think you're good. I think I could see this getting play in mono red.
He's attacking as a 3-2 most of the time. I think you really do like that Megamorph. He's harder to block. And that really cheap Megamorph cost gives you an opportunity to play that card that he draws you. I think that's got potential.
Okay, next card, Living Lore. I kind of like this card. And I could see it being, I mean, obviously it's really good and limited, but I can see it maybe seeing play in standard, but only maybe.
I like this guy, limited, if you're able to exile Temporal Trespass, and get your 11-11 takes extra turns.
I mean, like, a more realistic thing would be something like Cunning Strike, or, I don't know, what's, Treasure Cruise? Like, Treasure Cruise is definitely doable. But,
yeah,
What? You're not even drafting cons with this in limited, so no,
yeah, so
it's not happening.
Trespass is got to be it.
Cunning Strike is for sure relevant.
This card definitely has some sweet kind of Salvador Dali art, though. I think that was a nice touch.
Yeah. Okay. Next one, Mirror Mockery.
I love it.
Really?
I really think it's a cool card. I really like the idea of this card. I don't know if it'll see play in anything. I'm just really into this card. And for some reason, it just reminds me, and I know it, and I know you guys probably will kill me for this, but like, cause it doesn't make sense, but it reminds me of Phantasmal Image.
No,
it's a
and
I like that a lot.
No.
I like one in a blue spells.
Nope, not even close. Like, I don't even know what I want to put it on. There's nothing good to put it on.
Lord of Atlantis.
Lord of Atlantis.
just like a Phantasmal Image wants to be Lord of Atlantis.
Put it on a I don't know, Mentor. See,
the
standard.
No, you can't do anything with Mentor.
Play spells until end of turn?
Yeah. I think it looks cool.
I don't think so. Okay, next card, Myth Realized. Kind of good? Kind of pretty good?
I'm not buying into the hype.
No, you don't think so?
There's so much enchantment removal in this format.
It's definitely not what you want to be playing in Jeskai tokens.
Well, I don't like it. I think it has more implications than, like, the Mystery of the Unseen decks.
Move along.
Okay. Well, next one is a Necromancer Dragon. This one is pretty much the same. Like, it's a good limited card, but not very good elsewhere.
Okay, so this is the epitome of the Magic card that I will be opening a shit ton of because I don't want it. This is what I will be getting in every goddamn booster pack that I win in this set.
Yeah, it has that feeling. It's bulk.
Okay. Yep. Next card, Obscuring Aether. Kind of good? Like, maybe Trail of Mystery actually becomes a deck with this card?
Has I would really like definitely.
To have... I'd like to have three copies in play. And suddenly that makes me totally reassess this card.
Yeah, I mean, it's costed well, so you can put three down potentially, which I do like. Turning itself face down, I don't know if that's ever relevant, but kind of cool, I do like that it is one green.
Well, it gives it the potential to go. Right? Because if you turn it face down after they try and, like, naturalize it, you just turn it face down and then it's a creature that loses a target. It can't be naturalized. So,
right, but you're probably never flipping it back up then.
No, but I mean,
you are never flipping it back up, like, guaranteed.
Well, I mean, you could, yeah, I mean, just unmorphing is not happening. I think that it's a nice, like, icing on the cake kind of ability, because really, you're probably playing it to make your morph cheap.
Okay, next card is Pitiless Horde. This card reminds me a lot of, Master of Feasts, that 5/5 guy. He reminds me a lot of that, but not as good. So I'm gonna say no.
His potential was lost when he became a berserker instead of a warrior. Like on in high school, that he took the test and it's like, well, turns out you're gonna be a berserker. It's like, nah. All my friends are being warriors, you know, something must be wrong with me if I'm the only one that tested this way. But, yeah, I don't think he's good, and that typing really, I think, hurts the most. Because giving this guy double strike would be legit.
Okay, next card, Pristine Skywise. This card's really good and limited. I don't see any other implications for this card.
I actually really like this card. It reminds me of Pristine Angel, and I love that card. So. I like it a lot.
Okay. I mean, I'm not going to say that it's unplayable in standard, but I just don't see it. Like, when you have Ojutai. God, I love
Ojutai. Yeah, it's tough. It's tough to, just because that is so much better, but it's a little different. I don't know.
Okay, next card. Profaner of the Dead, or Profaner of the Dead. I think it's Profaner. Anyway.
Yeah, you got it.
This guy has some awesome art. I don't see anything else about it that I like.
It's gonna be an enormous blowout in limited most of the time that you play it. You're just gonna get like one-sided upheaval and you'll have nothing to say about it. Your opponent sacrifices some like 0/5 and then your board is in your hand and then you lose.
Yeah, it's more of that token hate where just all their goblins and things are just gonna go right into the exile zone or wherever tokens go when they die, so.
There could be some implication, because when he comes into play, you could play it in Sultai Reanimator, and you can, like, whip him out and sacrifice a 2/2 zombie token, and that does a lot of things to Jeskai. Like, you lose all of your tokens, and then Monastery Mentor, Goblin Rabble Master, a lot, potentially, Seeker of the Way, a lot of that stuff goes right back to your hand, and that could be a huge swing. Like, that could be a lot of tempo loss.
Okay, so this is, like, on a cards to watch list for us, then.
Yeah, and it can even exploit itself, I mean, so.
It can exploit itself.
You can exploit yourself, which will be a big thing when you look at, like, Sultai Whip. A lot of these exploit cards will exploit themselves. potentially. So sometimes you have a 4-mana activated ability to unsummon your opponent's board. Like, I would definitely think about it.
Okay, so Profound Journey is the next card. 5W. Return target permanent from your graveyard to the battlefield with rebound. I like this card in EDH. I'm not sure I like it anywhere else.
It's a lot. That's a lot of mana.
Yeah, too much mana.
I think EDH likes this card a lot because EDH makes a lot of mana. Okay.
Little Soul Ring.
Radiant Purge, we already talked about this. Some of us like it, some of us don't. I don't think it's going to be that good or relevant for the time being.
It's got a lot of potential. I'm really disappointed that it looks like it's supposed to be the white... I guess it's supposed to be the white Doomblade, but it's not white Doomblade. It makes me confused. It looks a lot like Doomblade to me.
Yeah, it does. I mean, if this was like Planar Chaos 2.0... I would expect this art to be on a white Doomblade. Okay, let's go to the next card, Secure the Wastes. I actually like this card a lot. I think this is a card, like, it can close out games pretty quickly. I liked the White Sun Zenith a lot before, and this is very reminiscent of that card.
I'm super excited about this card. I was actually really surprised when I saw it. And I think this is something that Jeskai tokens might want in it. There's, and the only issue is that there's a lot of token hate. But I am kind of excited about this card. Can't wait to play it.
Alright, next card is Sidisi Undead Vizier. We already talked about this card a lot. I love this card, some of you guys don't like it, but I think she's good.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Okay. Yeah, I mean... Sometimes I just don't really want to shuffle.
Okay.
Let's take the top card. Leave it the way it is. I don't want to be bothered.
Alright, next card. Silmgar Assassin. No. I'm just going to say no. I don't like it.
Worse than the Dragon Slayer, I think. Which is, you know, what it's going to be compared to.
Okay, next card is Stratus Dancer. Also... kind of good. It's like a... oh geez, what's that one card?
Willbender.
Yeah.
Kind of.
It's kind of like Willbender, but we don't have Willbender. We have Stratus Dancer. I don't know if people are gonna be playing this card. So
good. It's gonna see Legacy play to counter those sudden shocks. I can.
Oh my god.
I think if maybe it had prowess, it could be good, but.
Yeah, get out of here! No, this
it's still
not
a 3/2 flyer if you're using it. It's a lot of value. I like it a lot.
It's worth noting that if we're looking at this card and the other elemental for Mono Blue Devotion, conceivably you don't actually know what your opponent's card is. So that might change your lines. Like, you might not want to play instant or sorcery spell because it could be Stratus Dancer, but you might not want to play something else if your opponent could flicker up into, like, Megamorph 3/4. So, like, you could actually make your opponent think about what your face-down card is as opposed to just knowing that it's, like, this card or something.
Okay, Sunbringer's Torch. I'm gonna say no. I don't like it.
I think it's Touch.
Oh. Yeah, don't touch that torch.
Sunbringer's Touch. See, it's so bad I didn't even know how to read the name right. Because the picture looks like he's holding a torch, like this green and white torch.
No, that dude has Sword of Feast and Famine.
Oh, is that what that is? That looks
kind of
cool.
That's what it looks
no,
like.
No, that's like a preview for the green-white sword upcoming in,
It better not bolster. I'd quit. That'd be it.
Like bolsters. That'd
fill
be
out
awesome.
My resignation letter and mail it and be like, you put bolster on a green-white sword, I'm out.
Alright, let's go on to Serac the Hunt Caller. Serac didn't lose too much value. I mean, he did get weaker, but he's not bad. I don't think his formidable is very relevant, just because, well, actually, I'm lying. You can get formidable pretty easily with him, so.
Yeah.
He's good. 4 for a 5/4 is really good.
The poor badass teamer have become nothing more than waiters. All they do is feed a Tarka.
That's how I feel.
Yeah.
We'll have to talk about that next week.
Yeah.
Okay, two more cards. We got Volcanic Vision. What do we think about this? I don't like it.
It's amazing. Put it in your mono red decks, your aggro decks, put it in all your decks.
Four
seven
of,
mana,
right. Four of.
You want to open your hands and have, you want to see four of these in three lands and hope to draw four more. Move on.
Yeah, okay. you just chain them together if they didn't exile.
Last and final rare of the set is Zurgo Bellstriker. Zurgo got a huge demotion. He is now a lowly Bellstriker. Although he is a 2/2 for one red, I still think he'll see play. He's definitely going to see more play than badass Zurgo, but
Do you guys know which card it is that talks about, like, how Surok came to kill Zurgo or something, and he was just like, fuck. Man, I'm not even gonna mess with him, this is sad.
Well, that's just, I don't know. I like the duress that Sarkhan came back, and he's like, man, now I'm gonna mess with Zurgo again, and then he's like, oh, I don't need to, cause he's just a wimp.
Yeah, that's it. That's exactly the card I was just talking about.
It was Sarkhan, not Surak.
Sarkhan, yeah, same thing.
Okay, so those are the rares. Let's talk about notable reprints. I saw Negate, that's kind of cool. We saw Duress with some really awesome art. We see Explosive Vegetation, which is kind of mind-boggling.
And random.
Pacifism. Yep.
We see Pacifism, we see Mind Rot.
Tormenting Voice.
Tormenting Voice, yep. Dragon Potter is another reprint. What other cards do we like from this set that we think we'll see play? There's the new...
Anticipate.
We talked about Anticipate already.
Oh, we did?
Yeah, we talked about it last week. That card seems really, really good. There's the new Combust. That looks kind of cool, too.
Oh, yeah, that card looks sick. I like and I like the 0/4 wall.
The whole cycle, you got to look at that whole cycle.
I don't know.
There's a lot of stuff going on there.
Okay, so we have the first one is Surge of Righteousness. It's the white one. It's one in a white instant. Destroy target black or red creature that's attacking or blocking. You gain 2 life. Seems good. Second one is Encase in Ice. That's the blue one. 1 and a blue for an enchantment. Flash. Enchant red or green creature. When Encase in Ice enters the battlefield, tap enchanted creature. Enchanted creature doesn't untap. That seems kind of meh. Self-inflicted wound. 1 and a black sorcery. Target opponent sacrifices a green or white creature. If that player does, he or she loses 2 life. Seems pretty good. Rending Volley. 1 red for an instant. Can't be countered by spells or abilities, which is very important. And it deals 4 damage to target white or blue creature. This has extreme modern implications. Pick up your foils. And the green one is Display of Dominance. 1 and a green for an instant. It says choose one. Destroy a target blue or black non-creature permanent or permanents you control can't be the targets of blue or black spells your opponents control this turn. Seems pretty good against the control strategies.
That green version, most of the time they've done it, has been the weakest one of the cycle. Normally it's the control sideboard. Surge of Righteousness seems really, really nutty if you're playing against an aggro deck. That is so stupid that you can kill Siege Rhinos and gain 2 life for 2 mana. That seems particularly strong.
All right. So what other cards are we missing here? Summit Prowler reprint? Yay, kind of? No?
Nay. I don't know.
I'm sorry, I got really excited. Isn't that cool?
I like Twin Bolt. It's an instant forked bolt for 2. Seems fine.
Whoa. Wait. This is really cool, actually. You know on Summit Prowler, if you look at Khonzatar Killer Summit Prowler, it's the same quote, except it's Natula the Hunt Caller, and in Dragon's Attack here, it's Surok the Hunt Caller.
I would say, like, Twin Bolt is just fire, but without the ice.
Let's just ignore me. Thanks,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah, well, let's just ignore Summon Prowler. I'm trying my best.
One card that I kind of like is Vandalize, but only kind of. Just because Chain of the Rocks is a thing, and this card isn't completely dead in some matchups. I don't know.
I like Roast. Roast seems pretty strong for a red option to deal with the Siege Rhino threat. Siege Rhino menace.
I mean, roast is very, very first pickable in draft, for sure. All right, so that is our set review, guys. Thanks for sticking around for that. That was long, but worth it. I'm excited to play in our pre-release this weekend. What about you guys?
Definitely.
I'm
hype.
That's enough Dragons of this year for me.
Hype.
Okay, so this weekend we got pre-release coming up. Next weekend we have a new standard. Do we know what we're brewing with new standard yet? Do we know what we're playing?
Ooh.
Something aggressive. I really like a lot of the aggro options. I really like Atarka's Command, and I like red-green, so.
Yeah.
I agree, like, 100% with Jay. I think everyone's going to be trying to force some sort of control strategy for, like, the next few weeks, that I think mono-red is just going to shine completely.
I'm going to be one of those players. I'm going to try and force some sort of control strategy. I don't know if it'll be just blue-white or just blue-black or Esper, but I will be forcing some sort of control strategy for sure. What are you excited about, Will?
I'm not going to force control. It's just going to emerge naturally.
Naturally from your fingertips.
We're going to beat those grubby mono-red players.
All right, so we got a couple of things that we want to talk about before we let you all go. First thing that we missed on last week was the sneaky Thoughtseize that happened at GP Miami. A lot of other podcasts have talked about this already, but we definitely wanted to give our two cents on this. So let's get, Will, what's your opinion on sneaky Thoughtseize?
My inclination is to trust. Well, I mean, my opinion is to trust, but my inclination is, I mean, you have a level 5 judge as the head judge of this tournament. He says that he spoke to the player. He says that it felt pretty clear when he spoke to the player that there wasn't a malicious intent. I would have to throw myself in my camp. I can only assume that he's more knowledgeable about that than I am, and that he has the benefit of having done that in person and, like, been able to see it with his own eyes, as opposed to trying to formulate our opinions based on what we saw on a stream. I think it's really easy to see what you want to see, and I don't necessarily think that's the best way to go about conducting an investigation.
So I got a question for you, Mr. Will. Is it my job to ensure that my opponent has seen everything? Like, I have laid my cards on the table. I got Thoughtseize. I've laid my cards on the table. He can pick them up, right?
Yeah, so if your opponent is like, Thoughtseize you, and then you're like, here you go, and you hand the hand to him, it's pretty hard to argue that you didn't do a reasonable job of trying to let him. Like, the question is, you know, the concern would be that if he deliberately hid the card, then you're trying to prevent them from knowing that information. But I feel like if you give your opponent the hand, then it's certainly not your responsibility if your opponent does not do a diligent job of looking entirely through your hand. You put the cards out there for your opponent, and it's, you know, that's your responsibility, is to give him the opportunity to look at your hand, but it's not to confirm the contents of your hand with your opponent.
It's kind of like if they choose to write it down or not, right?
Right, if they elect not to write it down, and then they're like, discard this card, and you pick up your hand, and then they're like, wait, what was that fourth card? You're under no obligation to be like, well, you know, we've already resolved it. You didn't write my hand down when you had the opportunity to. I don't have to keep revealing my hand.
All right, well, I think that if you look at the video, you see that very clearly the person who got Thoughtseize wasn't, I mean, regardless of whether or not he hid the card intentionally, he was, like, his opponent should have done a better job at, like, spreading out the hand and making sure there were no hidden cards. I know that whenever I Thoughtseize someone, I always take their hand, whether they lay it down or not. I always pick it up to make sure I get all of them. And then one by one, I write them down to make sure I get everything. And then when I hand the hand back to them, I always ask them how many cards in hand. And sometimes, actually a lot of times, people look at me weird, but I've seen too many cheats to let anything fishy happen to me. So, I mean, I trust the level 5 in this instance. And that's all I really got to say about that. What do you think, Jay?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, the guy in the video, he kind of spreads the cards out a little, even after they're laid down. You know, if he had just done one more little spread, he may have seen the card. It's kind of on him. Like, as far as I can tell, he just lays the cards down. Like, there's no hesitation when he gets Thoughtseize to, like, prepare to hide a card or, you know, it just happens. And I think it was either the most incredible cheat of all time, which that's kind of hard to believe, or it just was an honest mistake. And, you know, it's on the person Thoughtseizing to really look and confirm how many cards are in hand when you cast that spell. So I don't think it's a big deal. It's just at an event the scale of GP Miami, things like this are bound to happen. The fact it happened on Cam is just kind of more happenstance to me. Cause I think the inclination is that less cheats would go on camera. You know, players are a little more conscious that they're being recorded. So, I don't think, it was malicious. And if a level 5 judge, you know, says the same, then I wouldn't question it if I was the opponent. You know, things like this, just mistakes happen. So.
Okay, and let's talk about the second most recent thing to happen in the world of Magic cheaters, and that is James Fazzolari. He was a writer for Channel Fireball, and because he got caught cheating at the GP this past weekend, he is no longer a writer for Channel Fireball. Do you guys know what happened?
Playing something from his lap, correct?
Right, so he got caught playing a Whisperwood Elemental from his lap.
So
there's a really, really interesting thing about this. I'll link it in our chat so that you can attach it. On the sub, he's actually posted very frequently on the Spike subreddit, and he actually responded specifically to the allegations, and not in the way that you might expect. He basically said that he threw away a lot, including his friendship with his opponent, and that it was the first time he cheated in a tournament, and that he's happy that he was caught, and that he thinks that time away from the game would be good for his mental health, and that he felt like he was under a lot of pressure to put up results, but he just kind of owned up to it. He didn't deny it. He's just kind of public about it, which is not, I mean, more than we've seen from a lot of other people.
That's very true. That's crazy, though. I mean, I've always said cheaters never prosper. You will almost always certainly get caught, whether it's now or down the road. Cheating is bad, and it's bad for the game. It's bad for everybody. And it's just, you know, I just don't understand why people do it. So.
See, I guess I do it when I'm not getting it at home. You know, I find a girl that I really like, and she just gives me things that the other girl doesn't give me, you know?
That kind of cheating is bad also. Fortunately for you, you don't have a girl.
Woo! That's right. That's right. That's why I get to go to Magic tournaments, suckas. All y'all fools that are in relationships. Not my problem. So alone.
It must be nice to just never, ever, ever have a shred of ever, ever having to worry about that.
Nobody loves me. That's alright. I get my love from my friends. And Magic. Magic loves me.
Only sometimes.
Can we go now? Are we done?
Are we done? What else do we got? So we have been streaming lately. We have our regularly scheduled Mondays, and thanks to Adrian, he's actually been streaming a lot more frequently. We have a spring break coming up for you guys next week, so maybe we'll see you guys stream a lot more. We also have Legacy Cube coming up starting tomorrow, so expect to see a lot of Legacy Cube action going on. Will, you promised us some Legacy Cube streams.
Love me some Cube.
So we will expect to see you playing some Legacy Cube for sure. All right, guys, this has been a really long episode.
Wait. I want to know what clan everybody's going.
Oh, I'm going blue-white, of course.
Yeah, seriously, what are
blue-white isn't a clan. What are you talking about?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, Azorius.
Azorius clan.
Azorius. I'm playing Azorius at this pre-release.
Okay, what are you going, Jay?
Probably Teemer.
Stop. You can't. What are you doing? You can't.
Yeah, I would go like green, red, black if that was a thing.
Is red, blue an option?
No.
Then yeah, I will teamer. Not be. I will not be attending this pre-release.
Good.
Just kidding. I'm excited. I can't wait to throw my dice at people.
That's not how it works.
Not part of your pre-release.
Yeah, it does. Depending on the planeswalker level of the person you hit is whether you get a rare, a common, or an uncommon. You guys need to pay attention and read.
If I throw a dice at you, do I get homelands?
Dude. Oh, homelands.
No, if you throw a dice at Adrian, you get a round of applause.
You get, like, chronicles.
You get a game warning. I'll fight you.
All right. So, good luck to everyone on their pre-releases this weekend. We hope to hear from everybody listening and share your stories with us. Remember, you can submit your spike tips to us. Look out for us on stream. And make sure you like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and all that cool stuff. So, my name is Eric. For the rest of the guys, we're out of here. We'll see you all next week.
Bye, everybody.